Welcome, everyone, back to the Brocast. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the On3 Network. I almost said the wrong thing. I almost did it. Dang. I'm joined by Tracy Pearson. Tracy, how are you today?
I'm feeling pretty good, Dave. I mean, we just went through a big thing. This week has been a little hectic, I'd say.
A little tiring. Not a lot of sleep.
But you know what? What really pushed us through, and I got to tell you, was just we are overwhelmed by the bro support and how everyone came over to On3, to Bruin Report Online at On3. As we were toiling and saying, you know, there's a lot of things to work through. It's a new network. There's so many great things about it. But, you know, when you sometimes it's just like a different language you got to learn. And just learning about the forums, but what buoyed our spirits were all the bros who came with us and are here. We have gone beyond expectation and we're really, really, really grateful, proud. I mean, I could throw a lot of superlatives out there, but thank you guys so much. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. So many of you come over. If you haven't already, just so you know, and I'll put this in the story as well so you can kind of find this. Right now, if you haven't come over, it's $1 for 5 months. So that's our little way of, you know, you probably still have a 247 subscription. So this is your little way of coming over without having to break the bank. So we're out on three. You can get it for $1 right now. So we have a lot to talk about today. We did record on Sunday, but it was a little bit more of a backslap, and here we go. Exciting time for On3. But now we got to talk about UCLA. There was a lot that went on this week. We interviewed Bob Chesney. We had some takeaways from that. The basketball program rebounded again against another top 10 team at home again.
Crazy.
And played its best game of the year. In blowing out Nebraska at home on Tuesday night. We'll kind of discuss whether we think that is something that can be sustained or something that was maybe a one-off because of the matchup and, you know, how that pertains to USC and then the Big Ten tournament next week. And then we also want to talk about this women's basketball team, which will be tipping off as we're recording in an hour and 45 minutes for its first game of the Big Ten tournament. They're taking on Washington in the quarterfinals. So we're going to talk about that and their odds of winning the Big Ten tournament and going into the NCAA tournament as potentially probably one of the top two seeds, but in my opinion, should be the number one overall. All right, Tracy, where do you want to begin? You pick.
Let's start with Mr. Chesney.
Babo.
What do you say?
The clone. Bob Chesney has been all over the place. He's done a lot over the last week. He has been everywhere. He has done everything. And that included an interview, with the two of us, jokers on Tuesday, in the Wasserman Center. We have now had two, different interviews with Bob Chesney. That is, one more than we ever had with, Deshaun Foster exclusively. And that is, two more than we ever had with Chip Kelly.
And we are in March
of year one.
I'll say it, that was our best content, football content, in March probably that we've ever had.
You don't think off-season opponent primer of New Mexico State compares?
You know, Dave, I'm so sorry, because I did, that does come under that heading, and those are excellent.
I usually don't write them in March. I just couldn't think of anything else. I couldn't think of anything else we do in March.
Well, throw one out there in March so it can compete, and I'll judge them.
Yeah, thank you. It was a really, really interesting piece of content. His willingness to get into depth and specifics about players and position groups a month out from spring ball was honestly pretty incredible and maybe a little reckless, but I loved it.
No, don't say that.
It was awesome. But he got into depth with us. He was willing to go wherever we wanted to go. He was open about a lot of stuff. Some of the more interesting things for me is, you know, kind of said, you know, our base is going to be an 11 personnel team. We want to, you know, That's, and for those who don't know, that's a single tight end, one running back, three wide receivers as your offense, which is more or less the standard. But you know, kind of putting that out there, it's hard to remember the last head coach who was even willing to concede that much, that, oh, we're going to be primarily 11 or primarily 12 or whatever, as far as personnel groupings. So that was pretty good. Julian Armella was one of the first names out of his mouth when he was talking about the offensive line, which I thought was interesting. Armella started last year, but then became a backup pretty quickly after the beginning of the year. I don't know. Those were two of the big ones. What were some of yours, Tracy?
I think there were a few things. I'm going to take it from the bro standpoint. Mentioning Sam Yoon at center. I think that was kind of significant. I got to agree with you. Then just his forthrightness in being able to talk about it. I think he's, you know, we've come to learn that this is a pretty savvy guy. I don't think he's giving away anything that he feels is going to damage, you know, the results of his team. Like he says, we're going to do, you know, 11 personnel. Dave, he might just be setting us up with that, right? I mean, I don't think he's not going to throw anything out there in March that could hurt him in September, only could help. So I just overall liked the forthrightness that what he was talking about, that because I was stunned by most of it. Just we were almost on our heels going, oh wow, he's going into more depth. So that was surprising, but I'd say the 11 personnel that he threw that out like that was kind of stunning. That I don't, that's unprecedented that any coach first would ever talk about offensive alignment, but to do it in March.
Yeah. And I will say, it's a very basic thing to say. Like it's not like it's like divulging state secrets. The interesting part is most of these guys are so paranoid, they would never even divulge that in an interview. So it's, you know, that's a good sign. That's a good sign of general openness and, you know, kind of willing to like discuss things. And like, even kind of the answers that I would describe as like not coach speaky, but like not necessarily giving a ton away, the thought process that he described when I asked him about scheme stuff, and he responded with, well, we got to figure out, are we good at pulling? Are we good at, you know, yeah, are we good at power? Are we good at counters? Are we good at pin and pull? Can we do all this stuff? And if not, well, then we've got to be more of a zone team, and we've got to, you know, run some RPOs off of it and do that sort of thing. And it's just interesting to hear kind of that thought process, because you don't often get taken behind the, you know, behind the curtain a little bit on the coach thought process on this stuff. And, you know, even like how you approach wide receivers. Can we win deep? Can we win outside? Can we win in the slot? And then what do we emphasize based on those things? You know, because we often talk about, you know, how do you tailor a scheme to fit your personnel? How do you, is that a thing you do, or do you try to jam the square peg into a round hole? And it seems obvious from just him describing his thought process that he is not that way.
Yeah.
That it is much more, okay, we got to figure out who we have, what they do, and then fit what we're going to call based off those things. And it was also interesting. I asked the question about both offense and defense, and he went offense first. He's a defensive guy. I don't even know that he got necessarily into defense on that question, and we were running on time, so it's no fault on him. But it was interesting to me that he went offense first with that question.
Right. There were things that weren't surprising, but interesting to hear. You know, we asked him about, how many new players that he's got to get to know and how he goes about that. So that was really interesting too, about just the meetings, that time away from the field, building, bonding, and then the time he spends in winter workouts on the field, in the weight room. I can say that's entirely unprecedented for a UCLA football head coach.
Yeah.
Other coaches would be non-existent during winter workouts. When I, you know, I liked how we talked about the James Madison transfers as being leaders, being a good go-between the coaching staff and the players. I mean, that's kind of what we would expect, but, you know, it was good that he emphasized that. So, yeah, there was a lot. You guys got to go listen to that thing. Yeah, for, I don't even know how long that thing was. How long was it, Dave, that
interview? 20 minutes.
There's a lot jam-packed in there. And there it wasn't just coach speak. There was a lot of information to get out of that.
Yeah. So if you haven't checked it out, we have not only the video, which you should watch. It's great to hear Bob. I mean, you know, and us. I mean, we, you know, we look like crap. But, you know.
We look fantastic.
We look great.
Well, not next to him. I mean, who would? George Clooney wouldn't hold up next to him.
But you should watch the video, but we also have a transcript in there that includes all the highlights. So check it out. Good stuff there. All right, let's get into some actual sports talk, some actual round ball talk. Let's lead off with the number one or number two, I guess, UCLA women's basketball.
Number one in our hearts. Number one in the Big Ten.
Number one should be. Number two in the unfortunate reality in which we all coexist. They're taking on Washington here at 9 a.m. This was one of the games. So they played Washington once this year, and it was just a couple weeks back. This was one of the games that was kind of a lackluster late season game. They won by 15. This was, and it's so funny. They won by double digits, and it's one of those games where you're like, yeah, you know.
This was a close shave for them.
Yeah, they didn't play great. They won by 15. I would anticipate probably the very focused, very ready to blow their doors off UCLA showing up for this one, because I think, you know, this is postseason basketball. I think they're ready to show a lot of people, you know, that they're ready to get back to the Final Four and get another shot at, you know, a UConn. So I'm anticipating UCLA putting the beat down on good old Washington.
In that first game, it did. I mean, this was down the, they were coming down the stretch. If you look at their schedule, it was one of the easiest games, you know, in the last few weeks of their schedule. You could see that this team doesn't coast that much at all, but you could see maybe it wasn't one that they would really have a focused effort. I don't think that's going to be the case this morning. Also, you know, UCLA's got a great team. It's balanced. There's three-point shooting. There's people who can drive and score. They got a, I mean, they're good defensively, but it is all about Lauren Betts. I think Lauren Betts, if I remember, was kind of dominant in that game. I don't think Washington has anyone who can really match up against her. When UCLA has that in that advantage, that a team, not even that they just don't have an individual who can match up, but they don't defend her well, the outcome is pretty much certain.
Yeah.
I think they'll emphasize that again. And I think UCLA will be focused, and this is going to be leaning towards like 20 plus.
Yeah. Betts had 23 points when they played last time.
Leading scorer too, I think. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And she was dominant. She was dominant at the rim. I think she was 11 of 15 from 2 point. So, yeah. I mean, Washington's got some players. Xavier Sellers is one of the best players in the conference. It's just, and this is the thing, like, if you haven't watched a lot of women's basketball, UCLA is just different. Like, the not only the talent, but also that they're all, or many of them are seniors. Like, the significant parts of the team are all seniors. It's just, they've got the experience, they've got the talent, they've got the, just, you know, they're more mature, they're older, they're stronger. And that combination is just so tough for basically all but like three teams in women's basketball to deal with. Washington is not one of those teams that can deal with it. So this isn't like, can this team get upset at some point? Sure. Have they shown any sign of that whatsoever? Like, no. This is the kind of team where you expect them to win and win considerably against, again, all but like three or maybe four teams in women's college basketball. Right. So today's game I don't mean to jinx, and I'm not trying to jinx. It should be a fairly easy win, but you should tune in. It's at 9 a.m. Probably as you're listening to us, this will be tipping off. But yeah, you know, what can we do? That was not the only women's basketball news. In addition to that, and this will dovetail into our men's basketball discussion, in one of the most joyous things I think I've seen in quite some time, Gabriella Jaquez, Charlize Ledger-Walker, and Lauren Betts participated with the dance team at the UCLA men's basketball game on Tuesday. We had the video of this. It was, they were honestly really good.
Oh, dang. They were so good. I mean, it wasn't like they were faking their way through dancing. These were, put it this way, if you were just watching and you didn't know what was going on, you would have thought they were part of the dance team.
Yeah.
From what I've heard, Lauren Betts, and I don't know about Gabriella or Charlize, but I know Lauren Betts was a dancer in high school and did extensive dancing, and it showed. And I just got to say, 6'7", and being able to move like that, I mean, it just shows you what an athlete she really is. That was really phenomenal. They were able to do that and probably put that together really fast.
You know, what's lovely. It's a side note. We're in March. You said 6'7", and I didn't have an immediate instinct to do this and say 6'7".
What are you doing, Dave?
You don't know this. You're not I'm doing the
I hand. Do know this. I'm just saying people aren't watching this.
I'm 6'7"ing. I didn't have the immediate instinct to do that, which means it is fully and completely dead because the olds like myself are not willing to do it anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was super cool. We have the video up on Bro. So check it out. But
there's a whole video too. You know, I gotta switch that. Oh, I did a link to the entire video and that's
So it's in the story. But you should check it out because it's actually really cool. And it's just fun. I mean, it was not just like the girls, but also Corey Close watching and like looking like a proud mama. It was
Here's another thing. We know Lauren Betts pretty well. We obviously know Gabriella. Charlize Ledger-Walker, if you haven't looked at her YouTube channel, she's really charismatic. She's very fun. Go check that out. She's a great representative of the university and a great personality.
Yeah. So anyway, they've got a really good chance of winning this Big Ten tournament. I don't know if they're going to be the number one overall. I would say like right now it looks unlikely just because
UConn would have to get upset. Right.
People are dumb. And the reality is that UCLA's schedule is by far tougher. And they have. So if you look at this wins above bubble category, right, which is what the NCAA tournament is slowly becoming the dominant statistic, they've got a full two more wins above the bubble than anyone. They're at plus 15.4. South Carolina's at plus 13.5. UConn's at plus 12.6. So Connecticut, yeah, they're 31-0. They haven't lost, but also, they haven't played as tough a schedule. UCLA has played a lot of really tough teams. They've played a ton of quad one games, and they've been dominant in them, aside from one neutral site game in November against a top four team in Texas. Like, I don't know. I mean, it's just...
You could easily make a case. Let's put it that way. I just don't think the case is going to be made.
Yeah, I get it. UConn's only played two top 10 teams all year. That's Iowa and Michigan, which are, you know, incidentally also two teams that UCLA has played.
Kind of telling there isn't a Big East team, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they beat Michigan on the road by 3, and they blew out Iowa, UCLA I'm talking about. Whereas, you know, UConn, I think they played – I want to say they played Michigan on a neutral. Let me check. Michigan was on a neutral that they won by 3. And then Iowa, they won by 26 on a neutral. Like, I don't know. I don't know. I'm just saying.
I'm okay with it.
If they play to Texas, if they play to South Carolina, let's see where they land. All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway,
is there a significant difference between 1 and 2? I know you match up with 4 or 3.
I just want the pride of place. All right, Tracy.
That's it. That's what it is.
Come on. This is legitimately the best UCLA women's basketball team. Probably one of the best and most dominant UCLA teams in the last, I don't know. I don't know the last one.
It might never come our way again.
There'll be another. I mean, UCLA dominates in a lot of sports, and there will be other teams that are, you know, I would say even maybe similarly dominant, but this is not a once a year occurrence. This is a unique team, not just for women's basketball, but for, you know, I think UCLA generally, and you know, reward them with the number one overall. All right, that's all I'm saying.
Yes, do what Dave says.
All right, we got to talk about the men's basketball team as well. So, while the UCLA women's basketball team was showing up the dance team during the game against Nebraska. UCLA.
Ooh, you just snuck that little thing in. You're going to get some responses from the dance team okay.
UCLA, the men's basketball team, played by far its best game of the year. Blew out Nebraska 72-52. It was the most connected and I would describe it as communicative defensive play of the season. And in the doing, they went from, I want to say, 42nd in KenPom before the game, and then they were immediately up to like 32. They're now down to 34. But that shows you kind of analytically why it was such a big win. This was a game where they were projected to lose, and instead they won by 20. It's just, you know, obviously it came after another disappointing game against Minnesota. But this is the third game against a top 10 team at home that UCLA has won. They beat Purdue at home by 2. They beat Illinois in overtime just a couple weeks ago. And then they beat Nebraska and beat their brakes off. And it was, again, spurred in large part by excellent defensive energy, effort, focus, connectiveness, whatever you want to call it. It was all of those things. And Tracy, the question for you is this.
Yes, Dave.
Can they do that against other teams?
They absolutely can, but it's not magic. There are so many, I wrote a story about the factors that went into that game and have gone into their recent uneven play where they beat a top 10 team and then lose to Minnesota badly. I mean, like, not watchable badly, really bad defensively. First off, they will never play at home again this season. That's significant. They're 17-1.
Oh, you don't think they're making the NIT? Wow.
Yeah. Sad. Well, okay. Let's just,
they're not.
Well, let's just put it this way of games that we would watch. yeah, they're 3-6 on the road and 0-3 at neutral site games. So let's just recognize these are not robots. They're humans, and they definitely play differently at home in the friendly confines of Pauley than they do on the road. And it's mostly, and we're going to come back to this, Dave, it's mostly because of defense. Defense travels, and bad defense travels too. When you play on the road, there's so many things that can affect you. You've traveled across 2 or possibly even 3 time zones. Weather, I mean, it's probably pretty snowy a lot in the Midwest. I won't go there. I do. I love Chicago. But anyway, and that's where they're playing, by the way. The home court fans, even though they say it won't, it will affect you. There's so many things that can affect you, and that can really rattle the team. And a lot of times it can be just as much, just even slightly, that it rattles your shooting ability. You're just off as an offensive team. You're just not connecting offensively. But what would keep you in games is if you're good defensively. You have a team full of good defenders. UCLA is not that. They're not a good defensive team. They do not have a team full of good defenders. So their defense doesn't travel. It doesn't translate. That's tough. Heading into the remainder of the season where they will not play at home. And it's psychological. You play good defense. They'll come back up the court. They feel good about themselves. They got that steal. They'll execute and be focused on offense. It goes the other way. You play, hit some shots on offense. Mick Cronin said it this year. I had some players, they miss a shot, they pout, they lose energy and focus. So then they don't play well defensively. So one side of the court feeds off the other side of the court. So there's all these factors. And then it's greatly about matchups. And UCLA matched up well against Illinois and Nebraska. They were, UCLA is not an athletic team, but Dave, you would say they looked more athletic than those two teams.
Oh, yeah.
They defensively, they were able to stay in front of their man. That was significant, all of these factors. And then UCLA was able to use its five-out offense against both those teams. You can just tell this is the offense that UCLA was meant to play with its personnel. Those guys, they are comfortable. Donovan Dent is used to playing this kind of offense, and he's got wide open lanes and space to be able to drive. Obviously, Xavier Booker is the most comfortable picking and popping. This is what they are comfortable playing, and they played their best offensive games utilizing this look. Minnesota threw a zone defense at them. And even though I can't remember how much they scored, it wasn't horrible, but I think you even wrote in their write-up, they just struggled offensively just to get looks, to execute and create easy looks. It was not easy. When they're doing that, they're struggling on offense on the road. They go back to the other side of the court, and they're not as energetic or focused defensively. And when you don't have great defensive players, that's enough right there to have a game unravel.
Yeah. And we're always hoping for one of these games to be a catalyst for some growth in that mentality that Tracy's talking about, where, the offense is affecting the defense and vice versa. And it just hasn't clicked yet. That's not to say it can't click. Maybe it will, but it's hard to like count on that at this point. I think so. This weekend's game is against USC. I don't think it's a particularly interesting game because USC is pretty decimated at this point. They lost their best-ish, most volume player in Chad Baker Mazzara.
That was such an interesting way to say their best player. You couldn't say that, could you?
He does things. He does a lot of things out there on the floor. Anyway,
not anymore, Dave.
No, not anymore. They lost him. I don't know. And it could very well be just an absolute blowout, no matter how UCLA plays, but also it is another road game. And I know it isn't in the Midwest, but it is a road game. It won't have exactly the same comfort level as playing at Pauley Pavilion.
Unfamiliar rims,
the whole thing, different arena, different fans screaming at you, whatever it is that's affecting this team. I think some of that will be present in this game. And so will they respond to that? And it's a rivalry game. So I think there's going to be a higher level of juice from the team than there might be in a typical away game. So it might not be a great test case anyway, but what I'm looking for is a dominant showing again, because they should be able to, exert their will against a team that is as decimated as USC is right now. They should take care of business. Now the bigger question is when they get to the Big Ten tournament, and I do believe they secured their double bye yesterday. So when they get to the Big Ten tournament, can they bring a level of defense? Can they play with some energy and effort, even if on those unfamiliar rims in that big arena, their shots aren't necessarily falling super easily? Because what we saw in that game is that a lot of these guys, I won't say can be great defenders, but they can certainly play more focused on that end than they've been showing at different points this year. One guy in particular, Eric Daly, was actually playing some pretty decent defense for long stretches of that game, and that's been absent for a huge portion of this year. Now, he doesn't have tremendous foot speed. He's not super laterally quick, but he does have two things, size and strength. Those things can play for you in not every matchup, but a lot of matchups. And if you combine it with an energy level and activity level, it can do even more. I think one guy who showed it, and he might be limited eventually by his athleticism to actually make an impact against the higher level teams in college basketball, but Eric Freeney, using his physicality, using his, you know, kind of linebacker type body, and just his strength and toughness, was able to push Nebraska players off their spots just kind of constantly. Just his body, you know, bodying up guys, being willing to be physical, just pushing guys around. Eric Daly was showing a little bit of that in that game. I'd like to see even more of that defensively going forward. But I mean, Freeney, like a 6'3 guy at his size and without a ton of verticality, pulling down four offensive rebounds, that is just pure. That's pure physicality. That's pure toughness. That's pure just strength. Eric Daly can do some of that stuff on defense while also being 6'8. So I'd like to see more of that from him.
Yeah. If we're talking about, I think this USC game is a good little first step, to then the postseason. It's a road game, but it's 13 miles away. So it's like a little baby step.
Yeah,
you're playing against an SC team that they've lost seven in a row, I think. They might get up for the game. It's a rivalry game, but they're trending another way. UCLA matches up well against USC. They'll be able to play the five out. So I think that's a good first step towards them. Okay, look, we did it on the road. Now let's really go on the road. And it's just the same. We're on the road, foreign rims. So there you go. A lot of it, I think, is the significant part of this is going to be the matchup. Will UCLA be able to, it's a team that will not, that their opponent does not run a zone. So they'll be able to run a five out. Are they athletic? Are they more athletic than UCLA? Do they have explosive slashers that UCLA's defense can't stay in front of? And then Eric Freeney might be that little kind of boost to the defense. He is a good defender. He's a young guy. He's learning how to do it, but he is a good defender. When he's on the floor, they were a little different. And I think it's kind of significant that, not that he would have made the difference and changed the game, but he played 18 minutes apiece against SC and Nebraska. And Dave, he played 1 minute against Minnesota. So put all those together. A lot of it is going to be playing on the road in the Big Ten tournament, in the NCAA tournament. It's going to be about the matchup. Is the other team athletic? Do they use a zone defense? And can UCLA show that energy on both sides of the court that feeds upon each other and turn in a good defensive performance? Maybe Mr. Freeney's part of it.
Maybe he is. I mean, I there is like something that he is, you know, athletically limited. But I don't know. He's certainly getting into more of the quote unquote Mick Cronin circle of trust. You know, he's playing more and more and more. I think in the last 16 games, he's played double digit minutes in like 8 or 9. And you know, that's a big difference from where he was at the beginning of the year.
And when you say athletic too, just because you and I go by people can use that word, and most of the time it doesn't serve our purpose well enough, because when most people think of athleticism in basketball, they're thinking about hops and whether someone can throw down a big dunk. And
right.
How often people do that in a game doesn't really, I mean, if you can get up and block a shot, great. But most of the time, athleticism too is about foot speed and quickness laterally. And Freeney isn't horrible. I mean, he's that with his instincts makes him a good defender. So yeah. Like you said, this is going to be interesting, but who should they get or might they get in that the first round when they play in? It might be Indiana or Iowa. It's tough. It you know what? We've done this before where we've tried to project who they'd play, and then there are some different upsets in the last game of the season, and it almost never ends up what we thought.
Yeah.
But it could be like a Indiana, who I think they match up well against, and Iowa, who they match up well against. They might be more athletic. And then, I mean, again, tough to project. It might be Nebraska in the next round. Now, Nebraska might come at them, and, you know, it's always tough to beat a really good team twice, but UCLA matches up well against Nebraska. So, I don't know. Be kind of fun if they made a run in the Big Ten tournament.
Yeah, and I mean, there is some meaningful movement in the seed lines that can still happen. UCLA now is safely in. They're going to be in the NCAA tournament, and now it's just, you know, are you going to be a 10 seed, or are you going to be maybe even as high as, I think, what's realistic? Let's take a look at the old thing.
But you're really good at this, Dave. How they do in the Big Ten tournament, will that really move a seed in the NCAA tournament?
It can do a little bit, especially the early stages of a conference tournament. What they don't do, and what they say they do, but they don't actually do, is have the championship game mean anything. So I think if UCLA shows well in, and by that I mean they win the first game or two, I think that could push them up to like a 7-ish, maybe.
It doesn't dramatically disappoint.
No. So Bracket Matrix right now has UCLA as a 9 seed. So if you don't know, Bracket Matrix is, I won't say the gold standard, but I like to use it because it is a aggregate of basically every published bracket on the internet. So you get a diversity of opinion on this subject that is not very purely mathematical. And that actually ends up, I think, a little bit more correct in the long run. And it's a smattering right now. Some of the brackets have UCLA as an 8, some have it as, I think there's still one that's maybe as low as an 11. Yeah, but it hasn't been published in a while. The rule of thumb is about a 9 right now. And I think, you know, the USC game will be a good data point more than likely. And because of USC's strength earlier in the year before they got decimated by injuries, it'll actually be a fairly good win for the WAB, the wins above bubble statistic. So that'll boost UCLA up a little bit again. And as long as they don't like fall flat on their face in the first round, I mean, even if they just played a decent competitive game, I think the 8-9 game feels about right. Though there's, I think, still a chance they get into the 7-10 on either end of that.
Hmm. Okay. There you go.
There you go.
We'd like to avoid Wisconsin. We'd like to avoid Ohio State.
Yes. Yes. And then, you know, obviously they will, if they actually win a lot of games, they will eventually have to play in Michigan, and that will not be fun for anybody involved. Either yes. Michigan, either one. Okay.
Okay.
Do we have anything else, Tracy? Is that it?
I think we got it right there, Dave.
I think we nailed it. I think we crushed it. I think this was some of the finest work anyone's ever heard or listened to. Point of order for everyone. I know this will not forestall any questions. We are still working on getting this podcast onto our RSS feed again. I don't even know what the issue is, because it's beyond my ken. It's beyond my understanding. It has passed out of the shadow and into the veil of night. I can say very smart people, much smarter than me, are working on it. It will eventually be fixed. It will eventually be a thing that is audio version again. But for now, this sucker is getting posted on YouTube. You simply can play the video and listen to it. You don't have to watch the little graphic that I'm going to make as the video itself. But you do you. You live your truth. But I want you to know we are working on it. It will be back. It's just not back yet.
There you go.
All right. For Tracy Pearson, I'm David Woods, Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the On3 Network. And we'll talk to you again next time.
See y'all.